If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, Jaya.
Everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Sadie Edwards says, unfortunately, there is no medal or reward for being right about future events, just resentment from those who doubted or didn't want you to be right. Absolutely. Absolutely correct. There is no business in being right. No money to be made. Other than the super chats that you guys have sent me across the years, I'm very thankful for them. But let's be honest, there's not a big market to be able to read the future. The way I realized today, thinking about it, I did. What you see in the everyday unfolding of the news, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens. Sorry about that. It keeps coming back. It keeps coming back, those beeps. What you see today in the unfolding of the news, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Megyn Kelly, they're exactly pursuing a line of thought that I knew would be necessary in a part of the right-wing commentariat. And I knew it would be necessary not today, not last year. I knew it would be necessary when Megyn Kelly was actually a young woman. Like, this is how far it goes back. Now, she still looks like a young woman, but when I started detecting the cognitive dissonance on the public space, specifically by Zionists, and I saw the events that were about to unfold, back in 2015, 16, 17, Megyn Kelly was still an actual young woman. And 10 years, 12 years later, there they are, coming to grips with the fact that there is a greed. There is a greed on the side of politics in America, which is absolutely misplaced, which is dangerous. Dangerous for the world. And this greed is at the heart of a never-ending series of demands of striking other people, of taking other lives, of acquiring more and more for the increasing power of Israel. And I saw this not 5 years ago, not at the second election of Trump. I saw this in 2015, 2016, and I started taking the means to alarm people about it. And when I think of what it took to be right years ahead, I think it's something that most people could not burden. Could not carry. You have no idea how much to see through the weeds of culture, to see through all of the kind of suicide drones, the ideological suicide drones that are sent to us as red herrings, as fake positionings, and as paid out influencers. To see through this weed and to say, oh, there is a problem in America right now, and that is, it didn't start with me observing the entirety of the political commentariat. It started with me engaging with people back in the days of Warsky Live, Internet Blood Sports, and all. and saying, oh, there are these people who come to us and they're not willing to engage with the truth. There are these people who are fleeing a discussion of the truth. You state the truth in front of them, and it doesn't only make them uncomfortable, which is, it's one thing that there are social taboos and that your average normie is not going to want to face the truth. That is one thing. But they are actually activated by the truth. They don't want to talk about it, and they want to actively try to demean you for trying to talk about it. And I'm talking about the truths of race. I'm talking about the truth of ethnic interest playing in the background in the evolution of America. They didn't just not want to hear it. They wanted to fight against it. And they had these little glitches sometimes where you would see in a debate, where they would come in a debate to deny race or something like this. And I would be like, oh, there's the bug. There's the lie. It was all polished. They were all trained to make it look like they were making a decent argument, but they couldn't engage with what I was saying. And you have a lot of thinkers these days who are like this. Brett Weinstein, one of them. People who don't want to do it in full. They want to engage in the restricted game. The restricted game of gatekeeping. The, oh, let's talk about this subject later. No, let's talk about it now, because if we have an entire intelligentsia that is only there to keep our eyes away from the truth, then we might as well not have an intelligentsia. This culture is a big waste. Netza sent $10. Thank you very much for the support. He says, you called the bottom at around 18K last major crash. Have you made a prediction for the current crypto recession? I have said that maybe the bottom has already been reached. I am not 100% sure. We might be either in a recovery already, and then 62K approximately will have been the bottom, or there could be a further bottom, in which case, if there's a further bottom, I would expect it to arrive perhaps in the two last years of Trump's presidency, maybe in the next year, and I would expect it to be maybe 40K, 50K. So those are my predictions. Now, I've said before, I'm 50-50 on whether there will be any other crash. So that's where I'm at. There are certain unfoldings in which Bitcoin is already on the road to recovery. If, for example, you can have a Fed injection of money, Trump tries to leave his presidency with a big economical boom. The Fed wants to reward him for doing what Israel wants with Iran. In those circumstances, you could very well have massive economic expansion. On the other hand, if the Iran situation keeps being unresolved and there's this continued doubt over the economy, and the Fed doesn't come in, and Trump finishes his second presidency a little bit like the first under some kind of COVID crisis, but perhaps more like Iran crisis, then you could have a second drop and you would be at 40K, 50K. I don't expect much more than this. I think that the maximal drama you will ever have in the Bitcoin selling sprees are the historical 2019 drop, which was huge. I mean, so I don't think it can get worse than this. Sadi Edward says, Brett is still not reading TRP. That's one thing we can be sure about Brett Weinstein. I love people you can count on. I love people you can count on, and I'm counting on Brett to never read TRP. He will absolutely just die not knowing about the revolutionary phenotype. It's a sad death. It's a sad way to go, but that is something we can count on. I love to have these solid beliefs that you can know that, you know, the sun is going to rise tomorrow. Brett is not going to read TRP. Stephen Robinson says, Jeff, that being said, when do you expect the next ATH for Bitcoin? I expect the next ATH perhaps in the first year of the next presidency, roughly. That's it's very soon when you think about it. It's in 3 years. That is what I would expect approximately. Of course, there's lots of things that can happen until then that could delay or speed up. But it can't go very far from this because the Bitcoin cycles are like clockwork. It's amazing. No matter what you do, the Bitcoin cycles. Yeah, 2029 says Marby Dog. I guess we're in 2026, so plus 3, that's 2029 for you. Absolutely. John Drake says, I ask Brett once in a while when he'll get around to reading it, trolling a little. You like to throw money out the windows? Here. Have you read TRP yet, Brett? Betaist Band says, Hi, JF. Can't wait for your next video on educating children. You've only done 3. Oh, yeah. I mean, perhaps I can gather some of my new notes, but I've pretty much delivered everything that I have in terms of experience educating children. We have to wait every year or two until I can develop new tricks, learn about new development stages and ages, and then I can generate such a show. Trump says that the war will continue as long as necessary. Jackson Hinkle has been one of these weirdo leftist anti-war, which I come to appreciate, you know, because if we're talking about leftism and economics, of course, Jackson Hinkle is a very detestable man to me. But at least on the anti-war side, it's funny how ultimately there is an alliance birthing. There is a rapprochement between the Nick Fuentes of this world and the left. It's very interesting and it's necessary because the fact is politics isn't all about left and right. Politics is also about the fact that both the left and the right are being subverted in the US. And as long as that's not solved, it should be the first problem. It's a much bigger problem, the fact that no matter what we vote for, we'll always get wars for Israel. That is a much bigger problem than our disagreements, our intra-social disagreements within society. Kids Dead says, JF, I have been using the Coinbase credit card and I get 2% BTC back on all purchase. It may be worth you looking into. Probably not for me as a Canadian. I don't know what's the status of Coinbase in Canada. But I have my own... I have my own cards and my own BTC exchanges, so I'm good, but I'm happy that you found something that works for you. Kay Taylor says, Jeff, what do you think is the average IQ of Iran? In Richard Lynn's book, IQ and the Wealth of Nations, Iran's IQ is listed at 84, but they seem too intelligent to have such a low score. Recent studies has Iran listed at an average IQ of 106, but that seems too high. It's hard to tell if they are closer to Lin's 84 or the recent score of 106. Yes, I have opinions on this, and I believe that there are lots of ways in which these counts, it's not a truth. Okay, whether a country has that IQ. Never forget, it's a statistical fact. It's probabilistic. And never forget, sampling is always biased. So there is no single answer about is this country 105 IQ or 100 IQ. The truth may be true if you could measure the IQ of everyone at a given time point. But it won't even be true 30 years down the line, because then you're going to have a different population, because there's migration, there's evolution, and there's just variation, random variation in who reproduces and who generates a new generation and who doesn't. And very often those things are very linked to intelligence, not in the way people think, but in the bad way, in the fact that intelligent people do not reproduce. So you read a Richard Lynn book, maybe it's from 2003. Well, I have some news for you. 2003 was 23 years ago. Not only this, if he wrote this book in 2003, he probably used data from 20, 30 years ago. So you have a distance between you and the data from 50 years already. And we're not even getting into the fact that this data was probably using a biased sample from the beginning. So the same thing happened in the supposed American Jewish intelligence that they say is higher. The thing is, you've used a biased sample because you had to make sure that they were Jewish. And by doing so, just like if you make sure that they are of a particular branch of Protestantism or whatever, whenever you select, you make an error in a direction or not, or in the other. So I believe that what's happening is that because they will tell you that Episcopalians, they have 106 IQ. But again, it's because you've been selecting. It's because when you start a selection like this, when you start defining, okay, that's the group I'm interested in, what are you doing? You're really taking the masses and you're putting them away. Now you're taking an elite and you're saying, okay, those are my group of Episcopalians or Jews. Just the fact of doing this, you've already selected people who are more likely to be with parents, who are middle class, higher class, who go to school, who end up identifying as Episcopalian or Jewish. So any action of selection has led you to acquire a special group and to dump the rest of the issue into a mass. That's the same thing they're doing with crime statistics. You'll see, I can guarantee you, within the next 50 years, you're going to see white crime rates increase. Okay? I guarantee you. And yet, white people aren't becoming more criminal. How can that happen? Well, it's because the definition of who considers themselves white will change across the next 50 years. And the white that you get in 50 years from now in the USA will not be as white as the white of today, and certainly not as white as the white of 100 years ago. So you're going to look at a graph of white criminality. And I swear, they will share this. They will share this in leftist circles, and they'll be, ah, ha, ha. So you guys are pissed, aren't you? It's like, no. We're not becoming more criminals. You're just including more people in our group. And this is a big problem when you start asking the specific question of what is the average IQ in Iran? And what is the average IQ in North Korea? The problem is if you look at the population of Iran, you will see that it has been absolutely inflated demographics-wise in the last 50, 100 years. Iran didn't always have 80 to 90 million people. So Iran has its own demographic flooding that is happening. And the thing is, you're going to see, well, they have ballistic missiles and they have drones. Wow. So, I mean, technically, they're more advanced than in Afghanistan, they're more advanced than in Iraq. Okay. But it's not because you have an elite capable of producing these with a whole scientist crew and engineers and all. That doesn't tell you anything about the average IQ of Iran. It tells you, okay, there's enough of a critical mass of people in the upper IQ scales to maintain a technologically functional society. That's one thing. It's a very different thing to say, well, then they must have a high average IQ. So see, you have to understand that there is ranges in society, and a society may show high levels of functioning and even have high levels of geniuses, but it will be the mass of it may pull the IQ down much more. This is why the apparent contradiction between the people who will tell you there's high Jewish IQ in the US, but if I go in Israel, I don't see high Jewish IQ. I see an average Middle Eastern people with average intelligence for this geographic area. So what happened here? Well, different division of masses. When you run that study in the US, you've selected elite Jews, and you've dumped the rest into not Jews or not sure. When you go into Israel and you sample people at actual random, then you get an actual demographic sample that is closer to the reality without the school selection, without the, I identify as Jewish in the US selection. Now you're faced with the reality in Israel. So my estimate is that Iran, in terms of its true average current population IQ, probably certainly not 106. Probably much closer to 84 or 86 or 90. That's where I would put it. But it's I'm not close to alternative interpretation, but it's like I don't see when I look at a population, I don't just look at their elites, or I don't just look at what they can produce. I look at the mass, and I look, what if I was to cross an average Iranian on the street? I look at their behavior on literally social media videos and all. And how do they behave? How does the average Iranian behave? How does it look when they protest? And I see just a regular, you know, Middle Eastern population. I don't see them. I don't see why they would be different from the countries to their right and the countries to their left. Sadi Edward says, replacement immigration is the most cost-effective weapon today. I guess if you're at war with the if you're at war with the West, I guess. ELDR says, every time JF talks about current events, someone pops up with a diverting question. Yeah, but, you know, these chill shows, I entertain questions. Why? Because I don't have much to say about the news other than, yes, we were right. And, you know, the Megyn Kelly of this world, they should take it in that I was sacrificing my life for the truth while she was at Fox News showing her legs. You know, no hate for Megyn Kelly. I find her beautiful. I find her, you know, she's loving. She's lovely. She's a lovely person, and I'm happy that she's reaching these conclusions with Tucker, with Candace. But it's like, you weren't watching live streams in 2015. You were showing your legs on Fox News. I wish that people acknowledge this. I wish I would, I mean, just, you could give me a paper certificate. I would stack it right here with such pride. Just JF was right. In fact, maybe I should just print it. Maybe I should just print it. But the fact that the cognitive dissonance of this small nucleus of foreign interest in American politics, that their greed would one day come to make the whole political system crumble and become unsustainable, and yet that the political system, through this crumbling, would just keep kneeling and keep pandering to this minority. We've called it out, and we saw the dangers of it 11 years ago and more. And we didn't make the millions. We didn't shut up about it for decades, try to keep it low while we cash in. We sacrificed our lives so that eventually a Megyn Kelly could realize what's going on. Marby Dog says there is no denying their influence and power now. Absolutely not. I mean, it's become so regular that you don't even get banned anymore. It has kind of lost its cachet. It has lost the edginess of it, because at this point, everyone realizes our society is controlled by Zionists, and they are pushing it in the direction of the wars that they want. Quite simple. And we saw it because we saw the little tick in the eye, the little bug in the matrix when we were speaking to them. They are operating on a totally different moral mode than the vast majority of the people you would consider normal. And this moral mode is a mode of ultra self-interest defense to the expense of the existence of others. It's truly what's happening. And they want to establish a social system of punishment so that if you even think that, you get punished for it in a very severe way. Title Fluid Imperator sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, Trump/Jake Paul interview. Well, I've seen the images and the clips, but it's like, are you seriously demanding that I spend 1 hour of my life viewing the whole thing, intellectually analyzing what's happening? It's like, this is clearly a kind of promotion. These empty guys, like, I don't expect that I can extract anything intelligent from this interview. I do not expect that Jake Paul will have at the right angle. And so, no, I'm not excited about it. And unless you would pay me more than $5 and say, Jeff, I want you to do this, I'm not going to do it, because I don't expect anything of interest to have come out this interview. In fact, it's kind of disparate. Because Trump is at a point where he couldn't face an intelligent interaction with a reporter, like a true hostile, like a Nick Fuentes. I think that Trump would be caught in certain corners if he faced Nick Fuentes, despite the fact that Nick Fuentes has high respect for Trump. But he would be pushed and painted in a corner. It wouldn't be long. So he goes with Jake Paul, because what can happen? What can go wrong if you get interviewed by Jake Paul? They've been working on this psyop for 2 years. The absolute lie that J.D. Vance is a skeptic on American interventionism. They're working at it so hard. I'm now convinced J.D. Vance would lead a major prolonged war if elected. One of the big thing that the big psyops that they keep coming back to is, oh, we got secret DMs from Vance. Let's have a look at them. Oh, it's Vance trying to convince Trump not to go to war. Oh, it's a secret. It's a whistleblower that came out with text messages from Vance. What is it? Well, it's Vance being super wise and intelligent about his approach to the military. Like, this stinks, guys. Peter Thiel, all of the friends, we see you. It stinks. We can smell the sweat. We can smell the sweat of Peter Thiel just all over these leaks. So now we are learning The White House sources are painting Vance as the great skeptic of Trump's attack on Iran, saying Vance flat out opposes the conflict and is skeptical of its cost and long-term success. I don't think they would have groomed a guy like this, and they would have promoted his book, and they would have promoted him to vice president, and now they're promoting him as a peacekeeper. Bullshit that this guy is being promoted to that extent with mimetic campaigns, including the Fat JD Vance campaign, which was a whole campaign aimed at making us love him with his fat cheeks. This is planned by people with lots of money. You don't get these Fat JD Vance with curly hair pictures without much graphics work. This comes from California. This comes from somewhere. And they are putting this guy forward because they're preparing the grounds for the idea that the American people will punish the Republican Party, probably on the midterms already. But they want to recover with an anti-war candidate. And so they're framing J.D. Vance as the anti-war candidate. It is so sad. So sad, because I don't think it's true. And I think, in fact, it's an absolute intentional misleading of the American people. And we know J.D. Vance marked, he pissed on the public space. When he got named VP, when he got named the co-runner of President Trump, the first thing he did is he gave this interview in the public space, on mainstream media, and he said, we have to go strong against Iran. So here's the technique they use. They will drop on the record a single speech like this, a single interview where they say, we have to go strong against Iran. And then they will shut up about it for 4 years. So you've never heard since then, you've never heard J.D. Vance repeat that. Now you will think eventually, okay, that must be an old statement of his. No, that's him establishing consent. That's him establishing a contract to which he can go back to when he is president in 2 years from now, at least in the plan of the Teals of this world. When he is president in 2-3 years from now, or even before if Trump dies, or if Trump becomes incapacitated. Then he can go back to this interview and say, no, you guys voted for me. And look, I was very clear. We have to go strong against Iran. So they are establishing a machine for consent, but then they are running psyops to make you forget those statements. Arden Goat says, yo, Jean-Francois, need infinite money glitch. Give me a prediction about the war in the Middle East. Vive le sud de la France. So, an infinite money glitch. I don't know. If I get the prediction right, are you paying me infinite money? How does your glitch work? I'm not sure. But my prediction with the war, I've been laying it before. I believe there are two directions. So one direction is Iran leads this war of attrition. Just subtle disruptions that are not super costly for Iran to maintain, that use very minimal material, and they just mess up the markets with this. This could go on very prolonged. And Trump would be like, the more he would want to actually intervene and stop these things, the more it would require ground forces and maybe in and out, you know, in and out operations. But it's very hard because you're dealing with very cheap drones and, you know, personnel that's infinitely replaceable. So you could actually send a ground force one night, kidnap 1,000 Iranians or just kill them. Even if you were to kill the 1,000 most involved military Iranians, you wouldn't have made a dent in their ability to keep the situation messed up. So that's one of the features of Terran, mountainous Terran, established society, difficulty of penetration, difficulty of operations, and cheap methods for war of attrition. This is the key for a winning side in a war. Whereas, can you imagine how much it costs just in energy and personal and money? How much it costs for the US to actually strike these single drone senders? I'm not even like striking a ballistic missile launcher, that's feasible. Although they do have high doubts, but you know, with satellite imagery, okay, we're investing a missile worth maybe a few million dollars that's totally coordinated through satellite imagery, boom. Okay, you just destroyed a big ship or you destroyed a ballistic missile launcher. But when you get down to the drone wars, and literally they have just tunnels filled with these little drones that literally humans can just send that way, and the drone starts flying. No matter how much damage you want to create to the airport, to whatever you want, there's always going to be an Iranian willing to just throw one like this. And then, oh, let's do this all day. How are you going to locate this? How are you going to crack down on this? What if they have 1,000 of them just sending drones like this? That becomes extremely difficult. It becomes, there is a point at which you need some sort of societal control, and for that you need absolute ground coverage. But then ground coverage of the kind you would need barely worked in Afghanistan, and Afghanistan was a very small society comparatively. Imagine with Iran, overpopulated nation, 100,000 US soldiers in Iran would have a hard time maintaining a single city. A single city. We're not talking about controlling the entire country here. A single city, because they would be surrounded by millions of Iranians. And try to hold a city in Iran. Try to do this with mountainous terrain, cheap weaponry, infinite population flow of drone attacks and all. It's like, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. You have succeeded. What we have succeeded historically at doing is setting up around Iran in other weaker nations. But a ground war on Iran, that would face extreme logistic issues. Joel Berry doesn't like it that young adults, young males, are learning about Israel and foreign policy. If an 18-year-old kid has extremely strong opinions on Israel and foreign policy, something's wrong there. That's not an opinion earned through years of learning and life experience. It's the result of a kid spending hours on his phone. Bro, Joel Berry, how many hours do you spend a day on your phone? Is that a problem? We have culture on the internet now. I think the only problem you're taking is not the fact that the youth is educating itself through phones. That's just the method they're using. They are in contact with real culture from their phone, the same way you try to create fake culture with Babylon Bee, probably from your phone most of the time. The phone isn't a problem. The problem you're taking is that these youth are exposed to original content that you disagree with. It's great that 18 years old are capable of developing opinions. Bingus Love says, 18-year-old kids have strong opinions on plenty of things. Always have. Exactly. He just doesn't like that he's losing control. I don't know. Did he think that his Babylon Bee crap would fool people? It's a little bit what Babylon Bee is meant to be, right? It's Jewish humor presented as Christian comedy. So it's so weird. It's so weird when you think about it. Because they try to make these jokes on abortion. And it's like, I can see through, guys. I can see through. Oh, look, let's make a joke about abortion. And let's make it like it's a conservative joke about abortion. It's like this would never cross the mind of a Christian conservative, first. Secondly, you're not a Christian conservative. So what are we doing here? It's like, at least, you know, I'm a Canadian and I deliver news to Americans. A lot of my audience is Americans. But I know I'm Canadian. I'm not trying to fool people about it. But Joel Berry is trying to fool someone. And he's trying to populate a place of the American intellectual sphere, that is cognitive sphere, I would say. He's trying to make jokes where jokes don't belong. Arne Goat says, I love how JF radicalized me, but I still don't understand his take about how traveling doesn't make you mentally grow up. Well, no, it doesn't. Have you ever seen one of these people traveling truly come back better and more intelligent? No, they will have these stories. They will be able to tell you these stories about what happened in their travels. But I don't see them being more moral, more healthy. I don't see them being more anything that's positive. No, I just don't see it. Cat's Dad says, would you say you are culturally Catholic? Certainly. Probably I have some cultural Protestantism even in me. And I have, of course, cultural Catholicism. Certainly, I would say that. Conservative figures clash over Charlie Kirk's legacy. The third erupted when Shapiro rebutted claims that his attacks on Kelly Morgan and Tucker Carlson were about Israel or anti-Semitism, instead tracing issues to their defense of Owen's claims against Erica Kirk. So basically you had Ben Shapiro attacking Megyn Kelly, Nick Fuentes, Candace Owens, and Tucker Carlson, saying that they are shamelessly letting Candace Owens be rude to Erica Kirk. Candace Owens was saying what they did to Gaza will one day happen to American cities. That is very scary. The fact that, yes, one day, given what we're faced with, it makes no doubt to me that one day we will be the enemy of the people who today claim to be our friends, claim to be our ally. And I'd love to see it, but it will be extremely painful economically. They will wage war hard, the same way they wage war hard against Gaza when they turn against us. Marby Dog says, Shapiro was attacking before Candace went hard on Erica. Oh yeah, it's all fluff. And it's like, I don't know what to say about all this. I'm just very happy that there's the Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson side, finally, in the media. I'm tired of being alone, you know? I don't even care that these people don't talk to me or don't acknowledge my past in pushing these issues. But I'm happy that someone is taking the torch. I'm certainly happy about it, because it's like, as much as an artist I can be, being alone for so long and being isolated is kind of, no matter how much of an artist you are, eventually it kind of weighs on your shoulder. And I'm happy that I can take a break one night from the show and know that there's other people who will be covering these important subjects. Megyn Kelly was responding to Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro was saying, you won't even protect Charlie Kirk's widow from the monster accusing her of murdering Charlie. Megyn Kelly says, you think protecting Erica means calling out Candace? I think if you don't wish to call action to a negative attack, don't call attention to it. Does that work for you, Ben? May I have your approval now? No, I don't think so. Because you and your little cohort of sick followers aren't mad about anything involving me and Erica Kirk, who you barely know. Trust me, I've checked. You turned on me when I wouldn't defriend Tucker, whose criticism of Israel you can't stand. And when I defended Candace's questions about whether Charlie, before he was killed, was growing more skeptical of Israel. He was. You're right that at Erica's request, I tried to help her and Candace to get to an okay place. An effort that failed, and which you now mock. But Christians like me are pretty big on forgiveness and reconciliation. I tried to help you and Tucker get there too, remember? More of my cowardice, I guess. One final point. You handled your anger toward me in the most despicable way possible. Did you call me, text me, raise it with me privately after all we had been through together over the years? No, you attacked me on stage at the Turning Point event without so much as a heads up. Because you were too chicken shit to say it to my face. I texted you afterward and you never responded. You didn't have the balls to have face-to-face talk or even a text or call about it. You are the coward, Ben. And your moral preening, priggish lectures, and holier-than-thou judgments are the reason you are losing fans, and more than that, friends, at a record rate. You always told me you were a family guy, not a friend guy. I learned the hard way what you really meant. That is good stuff from Megyn Kelly. I mean, it's kind of high school conflictual. But it's good stuff. It's good stuff. I'm happy to see that there is pushback. And yeah, I mean, Ben Shapiro has exposed himself as wanting to put forward this social system of punishment where, oh, you spoke to Tucker, you invited Tucker, you platformed. The kind of thing that Jordan Peterson fell for. And they want the whole of the media industry to be like this. They want cancel culture, basically. And that's what we've seen with the whole follow-up to Charlie's murder. They want cancel culture within the right. They don't want to call it that. They want it to be a little more subtle. But down the way, that's what they want. They want a whole system of repression that makes you persona non grata if you happen to disagree with Israel's imperialism. And there's more and more voices rising. Yes, Anna Kasparian has been absolutely honorable mention to Anna Kasparian. She's been going hard on this too. So it's good to see, wow, so there's now like beautiful women who are doing what I've been doing in the media for 10, 12 years. I have Anna Kasparian on my left. I have Megyn Kelly on my right. Feels good. Feels good because it used to be that you had to be a fucking nerd to say these things. But now it's less nerdy. Now it's wrapped in beauty. I like it. Because you had to be a fat nerd like JF in 2015 to be interested in these questions. End of the line, Joel says, it is not surprising that Sam Harris is in favor of the intervention. Obviously, Sam Harris has been flirting with pro-war argument. He was back years ago, he was trying to frame himself as, oh no, you know, in his debate against Cenk Uygur, saying, no, I've never said anything pro-war. Okay, but you also develop philosophical arguments that every time seem to trend in that direction. And you also don't speak against the wars. So it's like, they do this thing where they don't talk about a subject and they want to be non-committal about these sub-subjects. But then they want to wrap, they want to do the wrapping around to guide people toward that direction. Sam Harris does a lot of this. Brett Weinstein does a lot of this. Lie by omission. It's like, if you can't just sit in front of the camera and tell the truth the way you see it, like JF does, no matter if you disagree with me, you can have another opinion. But when you don't engage repeatedly on a subject, you are starting a lie by omission. And you are not a complete intellectual. And shame on you the day of your death. Shame on you for not having lived life fully. Shame on you. We have the privilege of being able to leave an eternal record of everything we think about, of the whole traces of our thought process, of what leads us to our prediction, and be able to have so many records of our statements publicly that the future can tell whether we were right. And you didn't take that chance. You didn't jump on all over it and try to seize every opportunity to engage on every subject transparently and honestly, as you know that the lies, they all cost something down the line. When you decide not to talk about race, when you decide black identity is okay, but white identity is evil, when you decide, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to point to the fact that there are foreign interests in our political system because I think it may make some people uncomfortable. Each of these lies down the line, they mean millions of deaths one way or another. Each lie is a genocide. Each lie is 1,000 genocides. And shame on you for living with this. For being able to live with this. The sooner the media is totally controlled by Israel, the better.
Or more fake news from CNN. Reports that the Trump administration underestimated the Iran war's impact on the Strait of Hormuz. Patently ridiculous, of course. For decades, Iran has threatened shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. This is always what they do, hold the strait hostage. CNN doesn't think we thought of that.
I love how the American empire is reduced to complain. They're holding the Strait of Hormuz hostage. It's like, oh, and you guys are trying to convince me that you're these big bad boys with advanced technology. We can do whatever we want. The American Navy is the best force in the world. You can't even neutralize a bunch of drone launchers in a 30-kilometer circle of the planet. And you're reduced to complain about it. This is the Department of War, Pete Hegseth. And he's like, this is what they do all the time. This is what they do all the time. They just take the Strait of Hormuz hostage. Wow. That is not very shiny. All you can do is cry about it. You can't neutralize them. No, you can't. Because you went into this without a plan. You messed up with another society unjustly, violating their sovereignty, and you didn't think, do I have a way to stop what's about to happen, what I'm about to cause? You don't have a way.
It's a fundamentally unserious report. The sooner David Ellison takes over that network, the better.
Oh, so now they want to secure the control of the information on the public space. Like, we're making 3 steps backwards here. I thought we were done with this. I thought that the YouTube revolution had changed information forever. But no, we're walking back into it. Now we have the government calling for a media to be controlled by their guys because they want it to be more pro-Israel. Nick has an excellent excellent clip. They will kill our empire to build Israel's. Then when they are finished with us, they will wipe their hands clean and then we will be their slaves. That is a very good reading on what the endgame is. Excellent clip that you will find in the show notes tonight by Nick Fuentes. U.S. Air Force KC-135 Stratotanker with 6 crew members crashes in Iraq. So it's hard to know what exactly is happening. Someone was making jokes on Twitter today saying, I think it was Dave Smith. He was saying, or someone else, maybe Dave Smith was commenting on it. They were saying that there will be a sudden deaths in American bases from cough and from other ailments to justify the coming coffins. And yes, I mean, the thing is, operations in and of themselves, I don't even know if these Stratotankers were hit by enemy forces or did it. But sometimes, you know, there will be friendly fire. Sometimes there will be accidents. Just operating leads to death, even if we're not taking into account the fact that, yeah, technology is getting extremely easy to use. And I think we may not be very far from the moment at which you can blow a $50 million American Bombardier big plane with maybe a $50 drone. I mean, this day has to come, right? Because it's just about flying to it and it's just about blowing it up. It's way too easy. It's way too easy. And yes, if you want to do this quick with missile technology, the missiles are still relatively costly and they are technologically refined. But we're not very far from the point where you could literally control a drone with a joystick and destroy enormous amounts of material, of military material, which is why all these wars that have converged in modern times by developed nations, like specifically the Ukraine-Russia war, they've all boiled down to $30 drones and fiber optic drones and other alternatives. Because down the line, it's all about this. It's not even so much about the big aircrafts. John Drake says, what about a $15 billion aircraft carrier? I mean, down the line, yes. Anything that's blowable with a small amount of explosive. So the weakness of the aircrafts is the engines, the cockpit. You know, that's why a lot of explosive missiles, they aim for the cockpit with explosive metal shards, you know. That's one way. The engine is another way. For ships, of course, the sinking of the ship is a method. And it's all a matter of how many $30 drones would I need to have to outflow the American capacity to shoot these drones down. Certainly one drone won't be enough, but what if I have 1,000 of them? Will you be able to take down 1,000 of them that come within a minute? I mean, this is going to be war. And so in a way, the way the Americans are trying to encircle Iran with their mobile, massive forces and these settled forces in Iraq, it's very old war. It's very old war with novel technology. But the concept of it itself is very old. The siege. And let us not forget, there is so much history of siege. The sieges of today are not so different from the sieges of yesterday. Down the line, there's a fort. There's a bunch of people outside the fort, and we have this in Iran. There's a fort, they have cheap arrows, and you're there with your tents, and you're waiting. And sieges used to be months and sometimes years long. So you have to understand what a siege is. A siege is a bunch of people who are fighting for sustainability outside the fort, while people inside the fort are trying to make their life miserable and to survive inside the fort. That is the position of Iran. It's under a siege. Now, it's a unilateral siege, which already any sort of war strategist would tell you, a unilateral siege is a very disadvantageous position. So we are on the southern side of the Strait of Hormuz up to Iraq. Okay, that's one point of access to Iran. Now, Iran has its eastern front protected with Pakistan. It has its northern relationship with Russia. So you haven't blocked Iran in any significant way. And you're standing there at the bottom of the fort, ready to receive the arrows. Now, the only difference between this and history is that now the arrows are little drones and missiles instead of just arrows. And not only this, your siege isn't complete on the eastern front, on the northern front, but the castle is positioned so that they can shoot down the moat that you use as passageway to your own siege tents. When you look at all this, you realize how bad this is, just how bad the American decision making is here. Look at Iran as a fort and understand that they have a moat, and that moat is the Strait of Hormuz. And they have a direct sight and access to shooting arrows to the moat that you use to transport the oil of the entire world, a large section of the oil of the entire world. Slifwave says it's a weird siege. They want to make life so uncomfortable for Iranians that they overthrow their own regime, but think they will unite against America and Israel first. Absolutely. So there's been strong attempts at Iranian psyops, also extremely inefficient, thwarted by the regime before the regime was killed. And there's no sign that there is an upcoming revolution in Iran. If anything, we have given them all of the social reasons to be pissed. But think about it as an American. Did 9/11 make Americans more pacified or more aggressive? It made them more aggressive. It gave justifications for wars. So if you commit 9/11s in Iran, or the equivalent, which is to kill their leadership, you are creating more justification internally for the society to regroup around a regime that will be even more militarized than the ancient one was. John Drake says, Iran can survive without imports. That's what makes this a winning strategy. Yes, I do believe that. First, they don't have an issue with imports anyways, because their eastern front are absolutely available to them. They have Pakistan, they have Afghanistan, and they have Russia. So yes, they can absolutely survive in the current circumstances, and we're not doing anything that's making their life hard. We are
what made the Brett and Tucker interview happen?
Oops, I tried to play
what it. Made the Brett and Tucker interview happen. Quite a scoop for Brett is complaining about Netanyahu speaking for all Jews while planning the future for the West.
Yes, it's. I haven't watched it in full, but I've seen clips of it up to now, and it's interesting because Brett has been playing this game for a long time, of not wanting to be critical of Jewish influence in America, and always wanting to insist, no, look, there's this difference. And it's like, look at me, for example. I'm Jewish, and I don't agree with Benjamin Netanyahu. And I find it fascinating as a painted-in-the-corner type of strategy. Because no one questions this. See, the problem of this strategy is that it's condescending on the intellectual quality of the opposition to Israeli power. The problem is it's It's taking the least common denominator and saying, oh, well, it's not all of us. It's like, yeah, we knew this. Not only did we know this, people were telling us this in 2015, and yet we still want to talk about a major problem of American politics. Because even if it's not all of you, that doesn't change anything. We still have to address this problem. There is a problem with the fact that a country from that has absolutely foreign interests to America has more control over the American government than the Americans themselves. That's a big problem. And as long as you don't want to talk about it in open ways, facing the truth, I will consider that you're on their side. As long as you want to collaborate with the lie by omission, I will consider that you're part of the lie. That is what we need to answer to these low-level red herrings. It's like, well, have you ever considered the fact that it's not about whether it's all of you, and it's not about racism, and it's not about anti-Semitism, but that it's still a problem? Have you ever considered the possibility that people like me who have sacrificed their lives to bring this issue forward, that we may have a point, and that it's not a point grounded in hate, and that it's not a point that is like saying that all of you agree with them, but that it's still fucking bad for America, even if it's not all of you? Aisha Gaddafi, the daughter of the slain Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, has addressed the people of Iran. Negotiations with wolves do not lead to the salvation of the earth. They merely set the date for the next hunt. Wow, what a wise statement from the daughter of Gaddafi. What a wise statement. Negotiations with wolves do not lead to the salvation of the herd. They merely set the date for the next hunt. Extremely well said. And you have these people. Keith Woods is tracking the statements of Richard Anania. Very interesting, because Richard Anania is one of these loose thinkers who gets it wrong all the time, who takes these non-committal statements, saying, oh, I'm trolling, or, oh, here's a little joke about the subject that I haven't quite exactly told my opinion about, but let's make the joke. And Keith Woods is identifying some of the big L's that Richard Anania has been taking, because alongside the warmongers, this guy was out there saying, has any theory in international relations been more discredited than blowback? It turns out you can just kill bad people and everything is fine. This guy was saying this about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. And it's like they were celebrating, haha, we killed Khamenei and nothing is happening. And anyone who knows about war, and especially about Iran and this kind of countries, you know that they're not going to reply within 24 hours. Things are long to set. They don't have this dynamic kind of Trump-led, Venezuela-style attack within 2 hours and then we're out. The war of attrition types of strategy of these poorer nation and less developed nations, they apply more on the slow scale. They apply on the snow scale. So I don't know what will happen with the war. What we see for now, the status quo is Iran is messing up stuff, and it seems that they are successful at doing it in terms of scaring the international markets, in terms of blocking oil flow, in terms of putting the American, I'm fascinated at how bad the American government communication strategy is. They don't seem confident at all. This morning, Pete Hegseth was saying, well, technically, the Strait of Hormuz is open. The only reason why boats can pass are the Iranian threats. And I was like, well, if I have a boat, I don't understand what you just said. Are you telling me I can pass? Or are you telling me I'm going to be blown up if I pass? It's like, 2 weeks ago, these people are like, we will neutralize any force anywhere. We are the American Army. The American Navy is the most aggressive war force ever. And today, 2 weeks later, they're like, well, technically the Strait of Hormuz is opened. But it's like, it depends on whether you want to accept being blown up.